Oh no!
I'm so sorry that I'm a little late. You had to hear Destiny's Child on repeat for 2 minutes.
It definitely got me in the mood. I'm ready to go.
Oh, good. I'm so happy to hear that. Well, we'll just go ahead and jump right into it. I know that it's your first podcast, and I'm really, really honored that you would speak with me for the first time about diversity. So let's go ahead and jump into it. Who are you? How do we know each other? And where can people find you or diversity online?
Got you. Okay. So it's Michael Fratangelo, a.k.a. Sunshine, a.k.a. White Mike, a.k.a. Sunny the Kid. Now, the first three, people actually call me those names, but the kid, that's just like the thing that I call myself to make sure that I feel young, so I'm going to keep that one.
Okay, you'll be in the convalescent home going, I'm the kid, perfect, with a gummy smile, wonderful. And yeah. How do we know each other?
So we met on Snapchat, like the early days of Snapchat. I was coaching basketball, high school basketball at the time, and all the kids were using it, and they encouraged me to get it. And, you know, a few weeks in, I started getting messages from the handle Ella My Bella. And I was like, I have no idea who this is, but she's hilarious. You would have this like alter ego and different personalities, and you do these different skits and things like that. So that's how we met.
For the record, that is not the whole story, Mike. I didn't just slide into your DMs on Snapchat. We have a mutual friend, okay?
We do.
And in my defense, I did not just randomly message you. Ian, I was going to New York to visit Ian, and he was with you, so I assumed you were in the city and lived with him, or, you know, lived in the city as well, in New York City. And so he was like, are you excited for next week, or something like that on Snapchat, and then he zoomed in on you. And I was like, oh, your friend's cute. Do I get to meet him? And he was like, yeah, add him on Snapchat. Say hi. Well, I assumed that he had said something to you, or at least
no,
talked
no
about
idea.
Oh, my friend Ella, like I thought it was all part of this introduction before we were going to meet in New York City anyway. And then it turns out you were just visiting as well, and you left town before I got into town. So I felt so uncomfortable because I felt I don't do that. I don't add random people on social media and just like, hey. And how long did it take you to realize that we had a mutual friend?
Definitely like 6 months. It was not
oh my god, shut up. No, you're so bullshit. That is too embarrassing. I cannot handle this story.
Shout out to Ian. We were trying to do a podcast with him. I won't say his last name right now because we don't want to put his last name on record.
Don't worry, Mike. You don't need to be nervous. There's only three people that listen to this podcast, and Ian is probably not one of them, so we can talk about Ian. It's fine. Ian gotcha. Goldberg. Find him on Instagram, people. He's really good looking. Okay, cool. So that's great. And lastly, of my intro questions, I know you said that you don't go on social media very often, but if someone wanted to find you or diversity online, where can they find you?
Okay, so it's a new me. That was the old me. This is the new me. And this is the summer of Sunshine social media. So let me rep the brand first. It's at Diversity World, and that's our IG and Facebook. And my personal, this is newly minted IG account. I don't even have a photo up there yet. This was done like yesterday. It's been a struggle. My name is just my first name and last name, all one word, Michael Fratangelo. And I'm telling you, my interns, my girlfriend, business partners, they're all like, bro, you need to start sharing with people all these good things that you're doing. So I caved and I created my own IG handle.
For the record, I have been telling you for a very long time as well to up the social media game, because to your point, I've been very, very active for many years. Not that, again, anyone listens, but I am quite active. So anyway, well, I'm really excited to dive into this. So, you know, we've mentioned diversity a couple times now. And before we get into this beautiful organization that you created, I want to talk a little bit about your background and what brought you to building diversity. So where did you grow up? Where are you now? what is your background, and kind of walk us through your, you know, life journey and how you came to discovering, founding, owning diversity.
Sure. So I was born and raised in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I then went away to college in Philadelphia, was very fortunate to get to travel the world and live in different cities. And now I am back in Pittsburgh. And as far as diversity goes, it's been, well, there's a few life experiences that really served as the inspiration for it. I had a different high school experience than most, and college really allowed me to put that experience into perspective. And I was trained as a sociologist in college and started to understand institutions and structures and how things really work. But in terms of what diversity is, it's a youth development organization that connects young people of different backgrounds, so different races, religions, socioeconomic backgrounds, and we do this all through sport. So at our programs, we intentionally bring together kids across different communities with the goal of having them create meaningful interactions. And it's my baby. I started it out as a passion project, fell in love with it, and now it's become my life's work.
Okay, so can I take it back a little bit? You very briefly, ever so like a ballerina, gently touched upon your unique high school experience. I always say I had a very unique high school experience because I went to an all-girls Catholic school. But it's really not that unique because there are hundreds, if not thousands, all-girls Catholic schools in the country. But I still want to believe that my experience was unique. Also, if you've ever listened to my podcast, you know that I'm kind of obsessed with the concept of high school because I'm literally so into it. I actually did a whole podcast with a girl because I was like, tell me what it was like to be popular in high school, because I'm just so fascinated by how we all have different high school experiences. It is such a pinnacle time in our life. And I truly believe that because it is this time in our life where we're transitioning truly from being the children that were spoon-fed everything by our parents, taking what we've learned, seeing, making our own observations in the world with our brief experiences in the world, where we get these small adult experiences, you know, starting to work, starting to drive, et cetera, and then really making decisions for the first time in our lives that truly impact the rest of our lives, right? And so that's why I'm very passionate about those 4 years, is not just because of the popularity in the sports and so forth, but we know you look at an athlete and talk about the start of his career, he's gonna go back to high school, right? You look at someone who struggles with drug addiction, they're gonna, you know, high school's often going to be very pinnacle and influential on the lifelong decisions. And I've seen that now since I've been out of high school, like 2 or 3 years. I've seen that with people who you know, made decisions in high school, whether it was not go to college, whether it was go to an Ivy League school, and seeing their life really blossom one way or the other because of decisions made during these 4 years. So I actually talk about high school a little much, but your high school experience, I do want to touch upon, because I think in the same vein, it is very integral and noteworthy in terms of your development of diversity.
I can totally relate to your obsession with high school. I feel like I may have peaked, and ever since then, it's been hard to get back to that pinnacle of my life. Plus, you have all those high school movies out there, right? Like, I know you're a fan of them.
Grease, I will say, is probably, if we were going to pinpoint my obsession with high school, it's gonna be because of Grease. And in fact, I did a like small manifesto in high school when I was graduating, complaining about how my high school experience was nothing like the Grease movie promised me. So, yes, I'm very obsessed. It was titled, I'll never forget, Where's My Danny Zuko? And I'm so dramatic. I cannot believe the school let me
do that. Don't make me laugh.
See? Oh my gosh. I'm fangirling, Mike. So can we talk about your high school experience? You said you peaked. If you did peak, like, then I think whoever you were in high school is just too good of a person and probably needed to come back down to earth, because I can't imagine you being any better, faster, stronger than you are now. But what would you say made your high school experience so unique?
Sure. So I started at one high school and then transferred to my local public high school. The difference between the public high school and the private high school was that it was entirely Black. I was the only white student in the school.
I hate to bring it to you, but like, leaving your private school to go to public school is not necessarily the most unique, but that last point, kind of unique. So you're white. We'll just put that out there in case anyone doesn't know, since it's a podcast. What was it like for you being the only white student in a Black school?
Well, it was definitely life-changing. I had exposure in the past to people that were different. Most of it was through sports, but it was really limited, even somewhat superficial. Because, you know, you go to a practice or a game, but it's not like you're having a water break as a 12-year-old and you pull up to your Black teammate and you're like, so, John, what's new? Any racist encounters you've had to deal with today? Now, I'm not saying there weren't meaningful interactions, just not frequent and not intentional. But what high school really did was it really opened my eyes to struggle that a lot of Black people face. And it's not just financial, but the emotional struggle that they face in our society. And look, everyone has problems, but the odds are really against you if you're Black. And as a teenager, I got to see that structurally, you kind of understand it, but I definitely saw it with the racist looks and the comments that my friends had to endure. And that stuff really got under my skin. It's like, you don't know anything about us or about our community. And it made me really want to do something about it.
How did your parents feel about sending you to an all-Black school? Like, were there conversations around that? Because I have to be honest, Mike, and I'm saying this as a Black woman, I would probably struggle, like, for me, thinking about my child's opportunities. So it's not about, oh, those kids are Black, I don't want my kid around a Black kid. It's more so me recognizing how society doesn't necessarily value Black students, where I would question, okay, is this school better for my child in the long run than this private school where he's perhaps more protected, sheltered, has the quote unquote fast track to college and so forth, right? So we automatically assume that private school is better in a lot of ways, especially at least in Orange County, where I live. But what was that conversation? I mean, you were what, 14 when you made this decision to switch schools? What was that conversation like with your parents?
Great question. And I am just so thankful that I had forward thinking parents, who made that transition in my life possible. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Everything you said, like sending your kid from one of the top-notch schools in the state to one of the lowest performing schools in the state, would definitely raise some flags for most parents. You know, I'm sure that my parents took some slack from other parents, and I can remember, you know, there were people in our lives who, you know, would make snide comments or, you know, say racist things about the decision. But in the end, I remember my dad just telling me, like, don't worry about any of that. Like, what matters is your happiness. And it seems like this is the right place for you. So.
Oh, that's so beautiful. I really do love hearing that. That's wonderful. I imagine, again, no matter how open-minded your parents are yet, there are some implications. And to your point, it's not just the conversations you're having internally inside the house when you make the decision, but then also defending that decision for however long. And so for you being the minority in an all-Black high school, what was that like for you socially? Like, were you ostracized? Were you picked on? It sounds like you had a good time. You said you peaked. What was that experience like?
Oh my God, I flourished. I absolutely had the time of my life. I just found a group of friends, and school as a whole was just so supportive. I really learned how to have empathy. I really learned how to like listen to people and understand where they were coming from. And that's something that I think, you know, you get at various points of your life. But to have that at 14, 15 years old and see the struggle of what people were facing. And these were classmates, teammates, friends of mine, and seeing that what they had to go through in their life was a lot different than what I was dealing with. Really opened my eyes.
As we speak about the Black Lives Matter movement, where I've been disappointed in my community somewhat is this pushback of talking about differences creates a divide. And do you feel that way, given your experiences? Would you say that recognizing our differences can create change and create appreciation? Or would you, or how do we do that instead of talking about race the same way we talk about hair color or nail color or car color? How can we talk about skin color without it dividing us? Do you have an idea there? Because I'm sure your skin color, I mean, you said you had the nickname White Mike, which, by the way, I don't love that nickname, by the way. I don't like to talk about race. I myself try to keep my conversations about race relevant to, you're not going to hear me say, oh my God, I was in a car accident. The driver was an Asian guy, blah, blah, blah. Well, that was bad because that sounded like a stereotype. I just meant like, oh, I was at Starbucks and this Asian guy spilled his coffee on me. I don't talk like that. And when I hear people talk like that, I automatically put them in an ignorant box because him being Asian had nothing to do with your story. And to me, it shows true colors. And it's unfortunate how often I've seen people in my life do that. I try to be very intentional when I bring up race. That said, as people say, talking about race is divisive. What do you think about that? You were called White Mike. Do you feel like your differences were embraced, celebrated, appreciated, or did you feel more divided as people brought up the fact that you were the only white student in a Black school?
I think it's absolutely necessary to talk about difference, to talk about race, and I do not think that it divides us. Those are difficult conversations. When you start talking about race and privilege and having more opportunity than someone else simply because of the color of your skin, like that's a difficult conversation to have. But I think exposure is extremely important, and it's really important that we recognize those differences and appreciate them. Many communities are so homogeneous that it's become easy to only be exposed to people who are similar to us. And that lack of exposure to people who are different makes it easy to point to things that could be negative or scary. And when people get the opportunity to meet someone that's of a different race and have discussions like that, it really levels the playing field. Kids are better able to see the similarities and accept the differences. And this is true with race, but also with other differences. So socioeconomic, gender, sexual orientation, disability, it's really at the core of what we do at Diversity.
I love that you just talked about the children, and you touched upon something that has been weighing a little bit heavily on my heart when you said the disability, and it's not just about race, and it's about the full differences. Because, for example, a couple days ago, I was at a bar, and the man next to me, I realized, was deaf. And I always get so excited when I see someone deaf out in public, especially this circumstance, he was by himself, because I started signing when I was 4 years old.
Right. Yeah, I do remember you telling me that.
And the reason why I started signing was because I had a teacher who had a deaf daughter, and she was like, I'm making it my mission for everyone to learn sign language because I don't want my daughter to live in a world where she can't communicate with people. And if you could see every single time, and my sign language, by the way, is not the best. I do sit in the deaf section at church just so I can be around the deaf community and practice more and be more inclusive. But ultimately, my decision to continue signing in my adulthood is so I can be more proactively inclusive of a community that is constantly ostracized in our community. And so if you could see the joy in every single time when I sign to someone who's deaf, if you could see the joy, And the oh my God, someone hears me. Someone sees me. I think more people would want to sign. It's not that hard to learn sign language, by the way.
Definitely.
Anyone can do it. And if you had a kid that was deaf, I promise you learn it really fast. If more people could adapt that methodology about the other, like, no, I am not deaf. I have no deaf people in my life. I was exposed to ASL because somebody who was an advocate for deaf people felt the need to put that upon me. And I've taken that throughout my adulthood. And I mean, when I was a server at a restaurant, the deaf customers were always sat at my table. They were so excited to have a server that understood them. And I love that. I feel such joy every time I can communicate with someone who possibly has gone the entire day without anyone looking them in the eye or talking to them. And so for me, I love that you touched upon, it's not just about exposing children to different skin colors. You made a children's camp. You didn't make an adult camp. Why do you think we need to focus on children? Because for me, I learned ASL as a child. I don't know if I would have proactively pursued ASL as an adult. It's because of that exposure as a child that normalized ASL for me, that as an adult, I'm leaning into it, more comfortable with it. I have no problem, you know, introducing myself to a deaf person and saying, hey, I sign, just because I've signed virtually my whole life. So for you, why do you think that we need to focus on children in terms of eradicating biases, discrimination, prejudice, racism?
Great question. And I think it's important that people of all ages work to eradicate racism and any of the other isms that you just mentioned. But children are essential in that fight. Especially with structural racism and hate, because they're the future. And for anyone who's ever worked with children or raised kids, kids are full of life and hope. And it's important that we prepare them and we give them the tools to make it better for their generation. You know, you talk about your experience with the deaf community. We started a program at Diversity that works to bridge the divide between the hearing and the deaf community, because it's rare for anyone to have an opportunity to engage in a real conversation with a deaf person. And at our program, we specifically pair hearing boys and girls with deaf boys and girls. And the theme is communication. Just because someone is communicating in a different way doesn't mean that it can't be done effectively. And accepting that difference is really important. And teaching that to kids is important, because if you focus on children, you see how impactful it is over time. Seeing kids come back year to year and see their progression through our program, having that consistent exposure really does wonders.
Mm-hmm. I love that. How do you, you said that you found deaf students, and I think that that's beautiful and so cool. I'm so excited. That's probably when I told you that I signed. But how do you recruit students for the diversity program? I mean, without giving, you know, your special intel, how do you kind of ensure that the program truly remains diverse and not just a program for XYZ students?
We work with schools and community partners to recommend kids to the program. And our goal is we want to get a mix of kids of all different races and socioeconomic backgrounds. And depending on the city, we try to target different communities to make sure we have that mix. You know we're not going to please everyone, but most parents appreciate our program. Most kids appreciate what we do and they get something out of it. So it's the students and the parents, along with friends of our program, that have been our strongest advocates. Who really help us spread the word about what we're doing.
You said that there are a few cities. What cities can people find a diversity program?
So we started running our physical camps in Philadelphia, where I went to school, and brought it back to Pittsburgh. We've done programs in Milwaukee and San Francisco and New York, and we've had certain activations run in cities all across the world. This summer, because of COVID, we're not able to do any of our traditional programs, but we are launching a virtual platform. So essentially kids anywhere can jump onto our platform and take our summer courses.
What impact do you think through testimonials? I mean, how long has diversity been around now?
13 years, going on 14.
13 years, oh my God. So your kids are like old now. 13 years is a substantial amount of time, Mike. Like, what impact have you seen diversity having that helps you keep the fuel and momentum of this program?
The overall change that we see with kids, it's just been incredible. I mean, we have the numbers and all the data from students and parents to back up the work that we do. And that's all good and well, but all of that really pales in comparison to the interactions that we see at camp and the testimonials that alumni share with us when they come back to see the program as young adults. In terms of what we see at camp, I always say you can judge the success by the interactions that you see during lunchtime. So on the first day of the program, all the Black kids sit by themselves, all the girls are by themselves. The loners sit in a group by themselves. The kids with the food allergies, they're all sitting by themselves. But by the end of the week, kids across different races, genders, they're all mixed together, throwing food at one another, and in a playful way, of course. But that's really where you see the magic, and you get to see the coming together of these people that otherwise wouldn't meet. And as for alumni who come back to the program, one of our first campers, he's a young professional working in D.C., and he, in one of his first years of college, came back and said, like, Mike, your program allowed me to actually have a conversation with a Black person. Having a roommate or making friends across races was something that just came really natural. And it was difficult, he said, for some of his other classmates.
May I ask why you, like, do you have Asian, Latino or Latinx, students in your program as well? Or is it really focused on Black students and white students?
Here in Pittsburgh, we don't have a huge Latino population. We work with kids of all different races, all different communities, and it really is dependent upon the city. If there's a higher population of Latinos or Asians, then, it's more likely that we'll have large groups of kids attending the program from that demographic.
We talked about how you had a white student in the program who felt more comfortable talking to Black people in college, right? And felt more comfortable talking to other people in college. But I do want to touch upon what it means for the Black students in your programs to be able to interact with specifically white students, because I think that it works both ways, right? It's not just about exposing white people to Black, Mexican, Asian people, but I do want to touch upon things that I've observed in the Black community in terms of the fear, apprehension of developing relationships with white people as well.
Yeah, I mean, we've had kids come from the city to our meeting suburban kids and saying that they thought the suburbs were miles and miles away, like it was a totally different world to them. I think having young Black kids exposed to the cultural capital that is out there in the world is eye-opening for them, and giving them that platform to make these relationships and sustain them over the years with kids who are probably more wealthy than them and probably go to a better school than them really gives them an opportunity to see what life is like outside of their neighborhood.
I do think that that's important as well in terms of working both ways, because it opens your eyes and world to potential and kind of perhaps can aspire for certain aspects of someone else's life one way or the other. So I think that that's really beautiful. As we're talking about race, as I said, probably more than ever for our generation, openly, publicly, on social media, talking about race, would you say that you're hopeful for our future? Do you think we're more or less divided? What are your observations in terms of having this program for 13 years as a American society, as a country, in terms of racial division and divide?
Ella, my name is Sunshine. Of course I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful by nature. Look, it's been that outlook that's kept me going the past 15 years. In my short time doing anti-racism work, like I've seen it quite a bit. This is nothing new. We have to keep making steps forward and look at what's happening now. We're starting to uncover issues that have always existed, and people are becoming aware of them. And we've seen racism presented, changed, and morphed over time, but it's still here. We're still dealing with it. You know, that said, I am hopeful for our future. Diversity, you know, at Diversity, I've had the privilege to work with young people from the city and suburbs, black, white, brown, low income, high income, and we've seen what happens when you strip down the barriers.
Since you first told me about Diversity, I truly have believed that it is a beautiful program, but furthermore, a necessary program. And quite frankly, I would love to see it in every major city in the United States. How can people like me, who don't live in Pittsburgh, who don't live in Pennsylvania, help make this a reality outside of COVID, all right? And for these programs, how can we bring these programs to our city? How is this possible?
Well, thank you for all of that and your continued support of what we do. Ever since I shared with you Diversity and what we're all about, you've been on board. And I can't thank you enough for that. In order to make Diversity scaled and reaching more kids, we need to have support in different locations, and support comes in various forms. So obviously we need funding to make things work, to fuel the engine. But we absolutely need like-minded community partners who share the same vision that we do. It's really hard to find people who want to commit to a long-term project and making sure that kids have that opportunity year in and year out to attend a program like Diversity.
From a funding standpoint, it looks like I'm on the website right now. So it looks like sponsoring a student is only a $500, which doesn't sound too bad for me. What if I was a team player and gave $500 and it says sponsor one student? Can you tell me what that means? How would my $500 get used?
Sure. So the $500 is used to help subsidize the cost for scholarship of students who attend our program. It would go towards paying our staff, paying for equipment, supplying our students with gear and swag and all things like that. Now, with the virtual program, it's going to be a little different this summer. But again, the money donated goes directly towards supporting our efforts, providing scholarships, and also supporting our overhead to make sure that we can keep things moving.
Beautiful. And Baller Alert 1,000, so that would just double the impact.
Absolutely. Right? Mm-hmm. The more money, the better.
Perfect. The more money, the better. Perfect, perfect, perfect. So for anyone listening at any time, if I can plead and beg, I have pledged $1,000 to Diversity because it is very important to me. Upon reflection and donating to a few other organizations, I more than ever believe that we need to accelerate this program and hopefully bring it to more students and children, of course, across the country, and as you touched upon ever so humbly across the world, since you have run this program globally, and that becomes relevant when we look at different religious persecutions and stuff across in the world. But I want to pledge $1,000, so count me in for that. But furthermore, what I really want to do is implore my friends, my family, my loved ones who are listening, as they reflect on ways that they can help change the world. I would say you'd be hard pressed to find something more impactful with your dollars. I think that when we look at bigger organizations, which I also consider donating to, they get politicized. Things get convoluted, things get muddy and whatnot, right? And with Diversity, I am more than confident that every dollar goes directly back to the youth in a cause that ultimately will make this world a better place. And I am so happy to support. So if you're listening right now, I really would challenge you. It could be $30, $50, but I know you got the coins, people. So I would love to see some donations come in to really help fuel this program. If you'd like to know more about it, you can totally reach out to me and hear my experiences of working with diversity over the last 4 years, or you can reach directly to Mike or the diversity staff. Mike, where can people find you one more time online?
Sure. So you can reach us at Diversity World. That's DiverseCity World at Diversity World, or personally at Michael Fratangelo. And Ella, can you spell that out with the link, or would you like me to spell it now?
No, don't worry about spelling it. I'm going to put it all in the link. So if you're listening to this podcast on any platform, just go ahead and look at the bio. We'll have the link there. We'll have the information. When you Google DiverseCity, so it's not diversity, it's DiverseCity, but it sounds like diversity when you say it quickly. When you Google it, it's the first thing to come up, which shout out to your SEO, Mike, because I have to say that wasn't always the case. And now you're the first result.
Let's go. Moving on up.
Yes. Yes. Already putting those dollars to work. I love it. I am so grateful that you took the time to speak with me today. I know that you're a very busy man, and you were one of the first people I thought of as the protests started across the country and we started to become really reflective on race relations in America. I have to say that at the risk of being too optimistic, I'm with you. I am hopeful. I am excited. I want to see more Mikes in the world. I want to see more Ellas in the world. I want to see more unity. And I am just so excited to see how diversity transforms and really just expands, because I have no doubt that this is what America needs, and it's just a beautiful program that can grow in ways that we can't even imagine right now. So thank you so very much for taking the time to speak with me, and I'm really looking forward to the future with you, diversity, and just America. So thank you, Mike.
Oh, thank you for that generous contribution to diversity. You've been a supporter since you learned about what we do, and I'm grateful for the financial support that you're giving now and over the past few years. But you've been a true advocate, and those are really hard to find. So I'm happy to have you on the team, and the pitch that you made to your listeners and to your friends is very appreciated.
For the record, they're not my listeners, Mike. They're my eavesdroppers. Okay,
my bad, coach.
My eavesdroppers, yes, all four of them. So thank you guys so very much. I'm totally kidding. I have like listeners, Mike.
Yeah, I know. You're killing it right now.
I just started too. I'm like, oh my god, this thing is like kind of getting some traction. It's been fun.
For someone who just started a podcast a few weeks ago, you're crushing it. Good for you.
Oh my god, you know I'm totally cutting that part out. But anyway, thank you so much. I adore you. I'm excited, and I'm gonna hang up now. Okay.
Okay. Bye.
Hey, thanks for checking this shit show out. If you have an idea you'd like to be featured here, my email is ellayourbellapodcast@gmail.com. Thank you.